Hey, everybody. Saul Marquez with the Health Matters podcast. I want to welcome you back to another episode here in Health Las Vegas 2023. I have the privilege of hosting two extraordinary guests in healthcare. First, I want to introduce you to Maleke Amini. She is the founder and CEO of Trait Health. We also have Dr. Roshni Kohli. She's the medical director at Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute. I want to welcome both of you to the podcast. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. And Maleke, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
We did one of these a few months ago. And folks, if you haven't had a chance to listen to his interview, I will post it in the show notes. But let's get started. And for those that haven't had the privilege of meeting either of you, what is it that inspires your work in healthcare?
What inspires me in healthcare and in doing what I'm doing right now is my own personal journey as a parent, navigating the very complicated behavioral health system, trying to get the right care for my own son, and really identifying that many times even I can't get the answer. And I considered myself someone who had access and was more privileged in that space. But even I had to rely on ER many times to get the right treatment or access to the right care. And when I think about this at a societal level and individuals who live in mental health deserts and have no access at all to care, it just is the part that inspires me to do what I do today.
Thank you for sharing that.
My journey into medicine, I think, first started with just a desire to be able to help people. And I've always been drawn to children, and I love the innocence of children and the way that they can teach us so many things. We think we know more as we grow older, but I find so many times, both as a mother and as a physician, I learn from kids and adolescents all the time. My journey into medicine and healthcare, I really started as a child and adolescent psychiatrist and women's mental health psychiatrist at a women and children's hospital. I had a very non-linear journey into being a healthcare leader. Opportunities presented, and I showed up and learned a lot. I gradually moved into the policy realm over this last year because I really found that if we want to make an impact in mental health, we need to think about those policy levers that really are able to provide equitable care to all. And why my vision is really that any child, any adult, any mother that walks into a hospital, that their physical and mental health are seen as one and the same. For far too long, we've looked at this fragmented type of care and this fragmented model, and it's time to reimagine the health system and really think about mental health as essential.
Love that. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think it's really important. We can learn a lot from kids. And as a dad, I definitely understand the importance of having a seamless experience, right, for my son and everybody listening too, right? You guys all understand that. You guys have a session later today, and that will focus on the foundational role of social determinants of health and the role that they play in mental health, especially for children and adolescents. What do you think social determinants of health contribute to the conversation or context of mental health care?
No, I think social determinants is really understanding the entire environment, the entire picture that an individual experiences. It's recognizing that not everyone has equitable access to opportunity and to healthcare. And so it's really allowing us to look at what are the essential aspects or the non-medical drivers of health that can help us to influence better quality and better outcomes of healthcare.
Thank you for that. Yeah, no, that the environment matters.
Yeah, just to build on this is exactly where the Trait's vision is as well. But I think, you know, it's well documented that social determinants of health have a huge impact on the health outcomes for all. And there are many social programs today that are trying to address food insecurity, transportation, housing, unemployment, and all of those are really important factors to create depression, anxiety in any family, honestly. But what is, and those programs have been to some degree effective. But as Dr. Roshni Kohli just mentioned, one of the important factors is really to be able to break down social determinants to a much more granular level that really highlights an individual patient's environment in a way that provides information for clinical care for them. Are they still dealing with some untreated childhood trauma? Are they having support and a healthy family environment? Those are some of the types of things that we don't really consider to be social determinants of health, but are really key pieces of information that impact someone's behavioral health symptoms. And even their response to treatments and how their outcomes improve. Really being able to break that down into the levels that are necessary to define the exact environment that Dr. Kohli was just mentioning, I think are key. And that's going to be part of the topic for us this afternoon as well.
It'll be an exciting conversation. And by the way, for those that are listening to this podcast, that conversation happened already at the event, but you'll be able to check it out virtually. And we'll make sure to provide a link in the show notes below. Where do you see data increasingly play a role in the delivery of mental health care?
Data and generally data analytics have been transforming industries for years. And we see that everywhere around us in our everyday lives and don't even think about it. In healthcare, we've lagged a bit in really looking at that, at data and analytics as a real tool for clinical care. And I think that one of the things that's important in mental health is not just data by itself doesn't mean anything, but really collecting the right data and all of the information that you need, structuring it in the right way, and then having the analytics that could really synthesize that information and create actionable, you know, insights for anyone who's making a decision is really key. And in mental health, it's no different. In fact, it's much more instrumental to moving mental health and transforming mental health. This is not going to be one of those areas where incremental change is going to really redefine this industry. It's going to be transforming the entire way we deliver care. And so collecting a lot more data, we tend to isolate the brain and really collect data on brain symptoms in a very specific way. And even today, those are collected on paper most of the time. But to really collect only brain data as if it's an independent organ in the body. But it's not. So one of the things, for example, that we are doing is collecting over 750 factors on each individual patient of physical symptoms other medical symptoms, brain symptoms, environmental factors, social determinants, childhood trauma, resiliency baselines, family history. A lot of information needs to be collected in order to really create that comprehensive picture of a single patient. And then it needs to come from multiple sources if we really want to have all that information. We have patient-facing applications, family-facing applications, secure entry points into our platform by any observer. For child and adolescents, we have school counselors that are able to put in content. We have primary care physicians that are actually providing information. And an individual clinician's brain is just not able, like any other industry, not able to really look at all of this data, synthesize them, analyze them in a single clinical visit and create actionable insights from that. So building that layer of artificial intelligence, use of technology, analytics is really going to be also key in making sense of that data. So I think we need to think about this as a kind of we're building it from the ground up and really creating a brand new model to deliver clinical care is how data is going to transform mental health.
It sounds like there's a lot of data that can be gathered. It's a community-based approach. The different entry points from teachers to counselors, health systems. So maybe did you want to comment on that data question?
From a clinical perspective, when we think about best practice, it's measurement-informed care, meaning that we're getting data points with a validated assessment tool to track something like depression or anxiety. We don't want to rely solely on the clinical interview. We want to have some objective data points in which we can see whether the treatment that we're providing is effective. And like Malika was mentioning, we want to understand not just how the depression and how the anxiety is doing, but we want to be able to gather data from all of these key informants. So when we see a child in a clinical setting, we also have to think about how are they doing at school? What is their school functioning like? What does their teacher think of how they're doing? Do they have friends? What does that look like? We want to be able to coordinate with their primary care physician because that individual is really the quarterback of the team. They are the individual that's oftentimes known a child from the birth and has a good relationship with the family. So we want mental health care not to be isolated, but to be coordinated in the entire way and the vision in which we see care. And so this measurement-informed care is really important because a validated assessment tool in and of itself is just some information that a patient or a parent may fill out. What we really need to do is be able to leverage data, to leverage AI, to help provide the information that a physician needs to be able to enhance their medical decision-making. It doesn't take away from the medical decision-making. You still really need that individual, that clinician, to be able to provide their clinical expertise. But data can be an incredible helpful factor in helping to synthesize that information so we can really do the best work we can when we're with the patient and family.
That's fantastic. And did you want to comment on that too,
Malika? No, it was just in agreement with Dr. Coley, you know, what any technology, any AI platform. I think there is a huge misconception when we talk about artificial intelligence, thinking that it's going to transform by itself. It is only a tool to enable clinicians to make the right decision. This is in any industry. I don't believe any industry is going to actually have just AI run it. There will always need to be expertise to make those decisions, but it's just providing the kind of tools they need to make a more informed decision and to have all that synthesized data.
That's great. Thank you guys for sharing that. Certainly promising to have data as part of the care experience and also the provider experience, right? Giving them what they need at their fingertips to deliver the best care that they can to these kids. What advice are you sharing with leaders right now in approaching mental health care?
I think one is that recognizing that equitable access to care does not exist right now. We have to recognize that there's been marginalized communities for decades, for hundreds of years, and recognize the aspect of structural racism within our community that for a long time has meant that not every individual has the same access to care and that every individual has equity within that. So when we really look right now, when we're thinking about AI, when we're thinking about innovative data tools, I think we want to be really thoughtful that we're really doing it with a goal of creating equitable access for all. And then the second thing is that recognizing that data helps us to understand an individual's environment, helps us to understand what type of trauma or grief they may have experienced, or what may be going on in their life that's contributing to their behavior and to their symptoms. So really recognizing that mental health or mental health symptoms are really just a symptom. We need to get to the root cause of what is contributing to it to be able to really make a difference. And then the final thing that I would say is that make sure that as we're looking at all of these data platforms and these tools, that we're doing it in coordination with clinicians. And so that part is key, that when we're making all of these different changes and we're trying to leverage better healthcare and better quality outcomes, we need to do that in partnership with health systems, with clinicians, so that we're really taking the best of both worlds, the data platforms and the clinical focus, and that together in that partnership, we can really achieve that goal of providing excellent care for all.
Thank you, Dr. Loki. Yeah, and it's rowing in unison, right? Everybody's on the same page, rowing in unison.
So to just build on what Dr. Coley said, I think there needs to be an awareness, and I think it's begun for leaders to actually recognize that there are gaps in care, that there are real disparities in access to behavioral health care, especially. My advice to leaders today, which are going to be really the leadership in federal funding agencies, in statewide funding agencies, in places where decision-making can be done at a scalable level, is to really think about how program successes are across the country. There are some real case studies done that are improving patient health outcomes, that are providing more equitable access to care. We're looking at a number of them in the state of Texas right now, and that they have really proven to be successful programs. And the foundation for why they are successful is the fact that there is a truly coordinated effort to deliver standardized products, to deliver standardized programs in a way that are not measuring success by just how many people are using it, but measuring success through measurement-based care, looking at patient health outcomes, looking at what demographics of patients are really receiving the care, and would they have had access outside of these programs? There are so many case studies across the country that are proving to be more successful. Public funding is taxpayer funding. There is no reason why we should think about them as any different than private funding is. There needs to be a way of measuring success by how they're returning that investment. Are they, if you're improving patient health outcomes, if you are creating more equitable access to care, reducing potentially ER visits by people who otherwise won't have no access to other types of care, is going to reduce the cost of care. At the end of the day, my suggestions to policymakers and to leaders is to really look at how we coordinated and worked together towards a common goal when we were trying to contain a pandemic, and how we were able to accelerate the development of vaccines in a way that genuinely did contain it in a much shorter period of time. Had we not done that level of partnership, private-public partnerships, to get something like that done. Mental health is probably the number one public health problem in the country today and maybe globally. And I think we need to have the same coordinated efforts looking at what is successful, looking at how these partnerships can deliver patient health outcomes, can deliver a lower cost of care, can deliver access for all and roll them out similarly, consistently across the country and really contain this at a federal level rather than at very local levels. There are no local variations in this. There are no state variations in this. It's just a matter of really looking at how things have been successful. Where have we seen patients get better, patients have access, and use that as a benchmark to roll out consistent programs.
Yeah, the need for standardization, consistency, integrated care. These are the themes that are rising to the top in our discussion. And look, you guys are doing incredible work to make this a reality. And so I want to thank both of you for the work that you've done and you continue to do. What call to action would you leave our listeners with today?
I find myself reflecting on the fact that mental illness is a pediatric illness, right? Half of all mental illness presents before the age of 14, 75% before the age of 24. And yet it takes 8 to 10 years on average for an individual to receive treatment. We have an incredible delay and gap in care. If we were able to reduce that and really look at ways and really looking at early intervention, early diagnosis, prevention, and early access to treatment, we have the opportunity to completely change the trajectory of a child's life and to change what our community looks like. So I think the call to action here is, from a policy standpoint, are we looking at policies that really look at equity with mental health and physical health, one and the same, recognizing the importance of investing in mental health, recognizing that means that we're investing in our future? And are we really creating programs that are enhancing those healthcare systems that exist? Are we supporting our primary care physicians? Are we supporting our educators? Are we supporting our health systems? Do we ensure that those individuals have a voice for how we make policy recommendations that ultimately affect all of us?
Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just you said it so well at the policy level. And I do agree. I think that it takes way too long from the day a symptom appears until we move to a diagnosis, move to treatment. And we tend to wait because we are a system that's driven by diagnosis, diagnostic codes. Everything is based on a single diagnosis. But the policy discussion has already been made. I think Dr. Coley explained that really well. I would even go back to primary care physicians and empower them, and also talk to families like myself, like the others that are either limited by cultural limitations and stigma around mental health, or not really recognizing that symptoms of mental health are still mental health issues. And to really speak up, to seek help, talk to your primary care physician, talk to your school counselor at the very early stages, because they are capable and they have the resources and they have the opportunities to really seek the type of consultations that are out there today and funded, and be able to receive the types of support they need to treat you where you are. It's most important, really, in terms of improving patient health outcomes, most important is to provide the right care at the right time for the patients where they are. Otherwise, you'll be waiting in a 2,000 patient wait list to get into a single psychiatry clinic when it's too late. So really being able to treat the symptom level at the earliest phase with the people that are accessible to you is really key.
Thank you, Malika. Thank you, Dr. Coley. Look, folks, health matters. That's the name of this podcast. But health matters in the behavioral and mental sense. It's the same. And so I want to thank both of you for being with us today, sharing your message. Folks, in the show notes, we'll provide ways to get in touch with Malika and Dr. Coley, learn more about what Trait Health is up to, as well as the health systems that they work with. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you for having us.